Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we are going to be covering Season 2, Episode 9, Christmas at Downton Abbey.
Or just the Christmas episode.
Well, there are many Christmas episodes.
There are, but it's the one that's
event episodes at the end of seasons.
Yeah, right, that are published at Christmas. And for those of you who watched this show when it was coming out, they would have a season and it would end, you know, somewhere like March. And then you'd have this like bonus Christmas episode thing.
Well, at least in the U.S., yeah.
In the U.S., yeah. So it was a big deal. Oh, it's a Christmas episode. And they're always a little bit longer. It's like a short movie or whatever. It's really kind of a cool thing. But we have our usual caveats and disclaimers. There will be probably cursing about how happy we are about this episode. And there are some things that happen in it, obviously.
Spoilers.
Obviously, I'm already spoiling things. And we are having things to drink. What are you having to drink?
We had lunch and I needed a Coke for caffeine.
Okay. Well, I wanted to match this episode. And of course, the cocktail book is fantastic. And there were several that I could have used for this. But I felt like because of the holiday themes and the other themes in this episode, I'm going with champagne, just straight up champagne. And it's in a lovely glass with a heart on it. So there we go.
Oh yeah, I didn't notice the heart.
Yeah, this is actually one of the toasting flutes from my own wedding.
So aww.
Isn't that sweet?
That's so sweet. Yeah. Spoilers.
Spoilers. There we go. Anyway.
Well, not for your wedding. That's what happened.
Yeah, that happened a while ago. But yeah, so we are going to have sections as we have been with Downton Abbey. What are our sections for this episode?
Our sections are Matthew and Mary, Bates, Daisy, Rosamond, and Edith.
Okay. And probably the shortest of these.
Oh, I forgot. We also have to have a Thomas section.
Ew.
Yeah.
Ew.
Anyway, the quickest one is probably Edith.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and do Edith.
Yeah.
So it's Christmas time and they're starting to plan for the New Year's shoot that the family goes on with some neighbors and such. And Edith starts asking about, hey, what about Anthony Strallen? Is he invited? And Robert's just like, well, yeah, but he like said no to all these dates. So I'm assuming he just doesn't want to go. And Edith seems a little bit disappointed. And
right.
Then, because to remind you guys, since it's been a while, Anthony Strallen is the old guy that was going to propose to Edith at the end of season one, but Mary dissuaded him to not do that.
I don't know why.
Dissuaded.
Yes. There is a process.
My grammar went out the window as soon as I used
there
a bigger word. I don't know what happened there.
So
I don't use dissuaded a lot. So.
Yeah, okay, but she dissuaded him from proposing by making it into kind of a joke. But Edith decides that she's going to just drive over.
No. Violet asks her for tea.
Right. And Anthony Strallen's there.
Well, yeah, Violet invited Anthony Strallen to tea. And we find out that he got like hit with a bullet in the war. And
his arm
got messed up. And so he basically can't use his like right arm or left arm or whatever.
Right.
Whichever arm, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I think it's right.
I'm not going on a shoot because I can't really.
Yeah,
hold
literally
a gun. So that's the way it goes. Later, Edith drives over to his house like to invite him out on a drive, basically.
Like the good old days, but this time she can drive, so.
Right, and so.
He says no.
He says no, and he's like, well, he doesn't want someone as young and lovely as Edith to throw her life away on him. He needs a nurse and not a wife. And her reaction is, well, if you call me young and lovely, I'm all in, basically.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, Edith.
But the thing is, you could tell that Edith connected to him, and I honestly think that they could be like friends or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to have a lot in common, but ignore our cat. He's meowing because it's almost feeding time, but not quite.
Yeah, because he's excitable.
Yes. And so basically I can see that Edith had a lot of like a big connection to Anthony Strallen because he at least showed some interest in her, which does not happen often enough for Edith.
Right.
And so she really wants to make this work if she can, because she also tells him, listen, Mary was just joking. She was trying to get back at me about something. What she said was not true. And he's like, I believe you, but I still don't want you to like throw your life away for me.
Right.
Especially now. And also once it gets to this point, like a little bit after this point as well, Violet starts talking about how like we shouldn't encourage this kind of thing. Right.
That comes up later though. So let's
Not really. This is still in the Edith section. Like you shouldn't encourage her to want to live as his like nurse wife thing. Like because again, Edith has her whole life ahead of her and she can meet all these different people if she just gave that a chance. But if she just kind of stops at Antony Strallen and is just kind of stuck with that, I mean I can see her point, but then again, like she also
encouraged it.
She also encouraged it by inviting him to tea in the first place. But
I think she was trying to prove, look, he's not a good choice for you. That was Violet's point.
Sure,
invite him over. Like, look, he's injured. It's worse than you thought.
He's a cripple.
Exactly.
He's old.
But there we go. So then. I think that's pretty much Edith for this episode.
Yeah.
There's not a lot to her.
There's stuff in season three about this.
And we'll
talk
about it.
We'll talk about it then, but it's basically mostly setting up
Edith's
arc in season three.
What did you want to talk about with Thomas?
You know what I want to talk about. Thomas wants a job. And he's a footman now again, because he was so helpful in the last episode and he proved his usefulness. And so he is back on as first footman. And so with Mr. Bates going on trial, he wants to prepare for, hey, well, if Bates does get hanged, how about I step in as valet? And Carson mentions this to Robert, and Robert's like, I don't think I can trust him after all this bullshit.
And the stealing and the everything.
Yeah, exactly. And that's completely valid. And I don't know why they even let him back as a footman, even though he proved his usefulness once. Like, I just think that he should try to earn their trust even more, or just get a new footman.
Right. Carson tells Thomas, look, you know, he has this discussion with Robert. He tells Thomas, nope, you're not going to get the valet position, even if something bad were to happen. Most of this episode is about how they're all certain that Bates will be coming back, or, you know, people are
hoping,
really hoping and being very supportive. And saying that, you know, he didn't do it and things like that, or at least everyone associated with the house. So the Thomas thing progresses and it kind of, you know, dovetails into the Bates thing.
Not that much, but he does
do stupid things to try to get Robert's trust.
O'Brien mentions, it's like, well, when he mentions to her, okay, yeah, he doesn't trust me because of the stealing thing. And so O'Brien's grand idea is, hey, steal something of his that he cares about and then find it and then bring it back.
And so he decides to take
Isis the dog. And so the poor dog. So basically he takes her to like a shed in the middle of the woods,
locks her in.
Well, how else was he going to do that?
I don't know. He just kind of abandoned her or something.
He did, yeah. That sucks, and he's an awful person for it, but
he locked her in, so like, I don't know.
That she couldn't be anywhere else other than right there, Mom. Mm-hmm. That part of the plan isn't, the fact that he does it at all really bugs me, but like that part of the plan makes a little bit of sense. But either way, there's this whole thing where Robert's like, oh, we're going to do a search party. And they get to that like part of the woods and Thomas is looking at it, but they start to turn back. And so he's just like, well, I can't do it now. And then Isis is found, but before that, Thomas is like running around in the woods trying to find her. She's not in the shed where he put her. And so
he gets really dirty and grubby. And Robert sees him come back and he's dirty and grubby. And he's like,
You did this for my dog?
You did this for my dog? Wow. Yeah, that's very encouraging. And then Robert gives this speech to Carson about, well, I think there's a real element of kindness to him.
And Carson's like, is there?
He's like, really?
That's so funny.
Are you sure about that? But it's funny, but his Robert's thing is we need to give him a trial as the valet.
Yeah,
just give him a
temporary basis, at least.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And so that's Thomas. Do you want to talk about Daisy or Rosamond next?
Let's do Daisy, because I feel like we're doing all the downstairs. Let's do
That's fine. Daisy doesn't want to go to the farm because she feels upset.
And she's being invited by Mr. Mason.
Yeah.
Again and again.
Yeah. And Mr. Mason also like comes in to like he visits the grave and then comes in for tea and is like Daisy tries to confess to him that, oh, yeah, no, I didn't really love him like that.
William, like that.
And Mr. Mason's like, he kind of misconstrues it and is just like, well, to know that there was friendship as well as passion. And then she's like, yeah, but I didn't feel the love or anything of that. And he's just like, but you made, but you gave him the thrill of the chase. Like he blah, 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 blah. Making her kind of feel even worse.
Yeah.
Because he's not understanding that it's, she didn't really love him like that even at the end.
Right.
That's right. Something he's not grasping. And it's, she's not really articulating that because also you want to be delicate with that kind of thing because sure. It's his dead son who he thought that they were in love. And so
right. Well, William certainly was in love with her.
Oh, for sure.
But Mrs. Patmore is like really kind of pushing. You need to go and see Mr. Mason because she sees, Mrs. Patmore sees, number one, that Daisy is not someone who knows her own mind very well, number one. But number two, that William set her up well. Like not only was he looking out for her financially, like you can get the widow's pension, but also that like she'd have someone to look after her, someone to care for her.
And he also did it for his dad too.
Right,
and that's mentioned later. But before that, there's this whole little mini thing about a Ouija board that they find.
They call it planchette, but it's a Ouija board.
And so O'Brien's just like, okay, well, we're going to use this. And the servants are just like doing that kind of thing. They make it kind of into a joke. And then Mrs. Patmore notices that Daisy's actually kind of into that. And so she's like, okay, my turn. And she makes the little dial thing or whatever. The thing, the shuttle, I guess. Go to the farm, make dad happy. Very specific.
And it's like, is it always that particular?
And they're like, no. And watching Thomas's face during that moment is so funny because he's on the same side as Mrs. Patmore, like moving it around and she's forcing it. It's really funny.
Well, it's funny, but it's also it's extra funny because Mrs. Patmore had been being very dismissive of the Ouija board. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, like, oh well, you know, this is definitely what you need to do.
And go to the farm, make dad happy. Doesn't come clearer than that.
Exactly. And Daisy's like, oh, maybe I should. You think it's, oh, is it William? And there's like,
and she's
yes, it is.
It's so funny.
And so she does.
She does go to the farm, she visits Mr. Mason, and they talk.
There's a subplot too.
Maybe that kind of dips into Rosamund's thing, but it's mostly her maid.
Yeah, her maid is Shaw. Lady Rosamund's maid, Miss Shaw, has been there trying to encourage Daisy. Oh, you could be at least a sous chef in London, a London restaurant, or you could be a cook at a smaller house. Blah blah blah. You're really good.
You're worth more than just being a kitchen maid,
right? Which yeah,
that's true, so true.
But Daisy, because she is so inarticulate, does not know how to do things the right way. So she just sits there and bitches. She starts complaining.
And then Mrs. Patmore's just like, listen, I'm sure Bates would love to be worrying about like a kitchen instead of worrying about being on trial for his life.
Right.
And Daisy's like, okay. And so she basically, she's kind of like going on strike and doing this whole thing. And it really is annoying, but you can understand the fact that she wants to be appreciated and I mean compensated for her work better than she is.
Mr. Mason is a really good mentor to her. He's like, look, you make your case to Mrs. Patmore that you should be getting, you get a raise and those kinds of, and have a new position.
Don't sulk about, just tell them. And yeah,
don't be passive aggressive.
Yeah. And then Daisy starts saying, but Miss Shaw said, and he's like, do me a favor and stop listening to that Miss Shaw. I love Mr. Mason.
Yeah. He is the voice of reason.
He's fantastic.
And
I love that man.
Yeah, I do too. But also
during their conversation before the whole like talk about the going on strike and whatever thing is that they have tea and like Mr. Mason basically wants to treat her like his child because he lost all of his other children because it's kind of a trigger warning, but his wife and had like three other children, but they either died at birth or like shortly after. But William didn't, and so he was an only child. And now that he's gone, he doesn't have anybody left. And he knows that William wanted to really marry Daisy, not just because he loved her, but also because he knew that his dad would need someone to take care of, or to take care of him, or to have someone to pray for.
Right.
And he didn't want to leave his dad alone, which is it's very William. It's very sweet. Right. And he's just like, well, you'll have parents of your own. And Daisy's like, I never really had parents, not like that at all. And then he's just like, well, I'll be your parent now.
Right. You're special to someone. And she's like, well, I wasn't really special to anyone. Except for William.
And then
she's like, I never thought of it that way. It's like, oh.
And it's a sweet moment, though. I really like it. And Mr. Mason being like, well, you're special to me. I was like, oh, it's so cute.
It is. It's very
sweet. Again, I just love Mr. Mason. Mr. Mason's awesome.
He's a good, good guy. Definitely. And for sure.
And so she, at the towards the end of the episode, she's talking to Mrs. Patmore about how, like, I know I've been complaining and I'm really, really sorry, but I think I'm worth more than this. And I know I can be assistant cook if you just like give me the chance. And then she's like, well, I have no complaints, but we'll have to talk about Doctor's Lordship about it and all that stuff. And she's like, I will work for it, I promise.
Right. And she has been. And so they are going to be like making sure they can stretch the budget and whatever.
And that's more of a season three plot.
But again, the fact that once she starts talking about it, like her reasonable human being, she is getting what she wants.
Exactly. And honestly, that's exactly what you should do. And there are certain times where protests like that is warranted. And we've seen that in history.
Right.
But when it's just something as small as this, you just talk to people.
Well, right. I think part of it too is that usually that passive resistance kind of thing, it can get people's attention when you've tried everything else.
Yeah, right? Exactly. It's usually the last resort.
Right. So, try. Please. Is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
So we also have, you want to talk about Bates or
Rosamond?
Bates is a bigger plot
than Rosamond is. Definitely. So Rosamond is in town for Christmas and New Year's, and she is bringing this guy that she knows in London named Lord Hepworth. And Violet knew his father she knows the family well.
Yeah.
And so Rosamond's like, yeah, no, there's this guy, and I don't know, maybe it could be something because she's a widow. I want
to look him up because the actor was really familiar. Go ahead.
Well, to give a little background on Rosamond, because we haven't really taken the time to, because she's not really that relevant. She married a guy that, like, kind of against Violet's wishes, who had a lot, he was like a self-made man, had plenty of money. And I think his first name was Marmaduke or something. It was really funny.
Yeah, it's like this ridiculous name.
Really pompous name. But he, no offense to anybody named Marmaduke, but except for that great
or your dog.
But she married this guy, and then he died. And so she inherited his fortune. And so that's why she can afford to live in London on, like, I don't know, some square. I don't know. I forget which square. It doesn't matter. So she's lonely, and she wants companionship, and she thinks that maybe Lord Hepworth could be a good replacement for that. And so they're what?
Just, I figured out who the actor is. It's Nigel Havers. He was in Chariots of Fire and Empire of the Sun. He definitely has done a lot of stuff. Okay. Go ahead.
All right. Well, anyway, so she invites him, and they're catching up, and Violet finds out that his family is bankrupt, and he has like so many mortgages on like the last remaining house in London, and he seems to be like a fortune hunter and just wants Rosamond for the money. And so she's like, you need to tell Rosamond. And,
right,
and so
she invites him to tea, and she's like, well, because he's been hiding, and she's like, so tell me about this house that you have. And they're all of them, because he basically pissed through the money is what it comes down to, because they used to have houses until he became the lord, and all of a sudden they're gone.
Yeah. And so she is just like, you need to tell Rosamond. She knows her own mind, she can do whatever she wants with the money that she has, but you need to tell her. And so basically what happens is he tells Rosamond, and Violet talks to Rosamond about it, and Rosamond's just like, I don't think I mind that he wants me for the money, because I think that there is something more there than just the money. And so, and she's going to think about it. And Violet talks to Robert about it. And it's just like, let's tie up the money. Let's make sure that if she does choose to like marry him, to be very, very careful with finances given to Rosamond and all that stuff. So, because they don't want to make this, make a mistake like he did.
Yeah. And Robert's like, tie up the money, tie up the money, tie up the money. And Violet's like, yeah, I mean, you can marry a fortune hunter.
But... Yeah, no, it's her choice. It's just, they know that once it comes to finances, like their finances going to Rosamond, they need to be careful. So right. There you go. But they're letting her choose. And then later on, Anna has been noticing that the Miss Shaw, her maid, Rosamond's maid, and Lord Hepworth have been talking like weirdly close in the halls. And whenever like she walks over, like the Miss Shaw is just like, oh yeah, well, he wants me to like talk him up to Lady Rosamond, and you know men, and it's just like, I know women too. And then during the servants' ball at the end of this episode, she notices them going up, both Hepworth and Shaw going upstairs, and then Mary, Anna, and Rosamond go up to the bedroom. I guess it's his bedroom, and they catch them in the act of, you know, having sex. Yeah. And so yeah,
basically what happens is Anna tells Mary tells Rosamond, we need to go, whatever, and they catch them in the act, and yeah, it's bad.
And then they're just like, well, how about you marry Shaw? And then Shaw's like, I've been telling him that. It's like, all right, then he clearly just doesn't want to marry him. But either way, yeah. So they're like, all right, yeah, you're going to leave, and I'm firing you. And so that's that. And Rosamond's disappointed because Violet was correct.
Well, she hates that Violet was correct. She also hates... You know, she's it's a hard position to be in. She's sure. A widow. She's not a child. You know, she's not got all the prospects, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of
she's not like a young debutante. It's right. Just...
And a lot of the choices out there are going to be fortune hunters. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the fact that he was a fortune hunter wasn't a big deal to her.
It was the fact that he was sleeping with her maid
and lying to her.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. No, it was bad.
Yeah. And so that's basically Rosamond.
You want to talk about Bates now?
Sure. So Bates is on trial for his life, and
well, right,
I say that very casually,
right? No, he is on trial for killing Vera, and of course the case is very circumstantial,
but it's also kind of strong because he didn't mention that he bought the rat, admit that he bought the rat poison,
right,
which so, makes him look really bad.
Yeah, but again, from a prosecutor's perspective, I'm looking at this as a prosecutor, it's like, what you have are like some gee, I wish she was dead statements. And you have like, he went to London the day before she's found dead. That's pretty much it. And honestly, to, you know, especially in these days of technology, that's not a lot to hang your hat on.
Well, yeah, but it's what they have.
It's what they have.
And given the fact that the defense sucks, like, I mean.
Oh, yeah, God, I was so pissed off with how this was handled, because even Murray is the solicitor. So the way the legal system is set up in Britain is that a person hires a solicitor, and then the solicitor's firm hires the person who does the actual in-court advocacy. So it's like this layer. You talk to the solicitor, and then the solicitor conveys your wishes as the client to the actual advocates who appear in court. And so there isn't a lot of prep. Murray didn't do a lot of prep with any of the witnesses. He didn't seem to have talked to Bates much, except like the day before. And so like they're sitting there getting surprised by all of these things. And some of the witnesses who are getting called are people from Denver.
Yeah. So the people who are called as witnesses, there are two for the prosecution, one for the defense. The two for prosecution are Mrs. Hughes and Miss O'Brien. I do not know how Bates knew that they were listening in on any of the fucking conversations that he had. Or how the police
did, right?
No, that's the thing. What I think happened is that based off of Bates's testimony to them before the trial, that's how they were able to figure out who to call as witnesses.
Right.
Bates, I don't know how he knew that Mrs. Hughes or Miss O'Brien were listening in on any of their conversations.
Right.
Or why, like, that would be mentioned at all, but somehow they magically know. And
It does seem also kind of strange. Yeah. Now, I honestly, if they were redoing a murder investigation, it would make sense for them to have like interviewed the other people that he worked with to see if he'd made any statements or anything. And so maybe they got it through a normal investigative means.
But no, but they're confused about why they were called for the like prosecution in the first place.
Right. But that's probably based on police investigation. The thing with Robert at the end.
Yeah, Robert was called for the defense.
Right. But they know like a conversation between Robert and Bates, and that is strictly on Bates telling them about it. And it's like, are you insane?
Well, no, but I can see how they roundabout got to that point, like to get them really like dramatic moment. Like Bates mentioned that Robert prescribed discretion whenever he was going to go to London that last time. And so what the prosecution asked is, was there a particular statement that made you want to prescribe discretion or like restraint or whatever? So it makes sense why they would like be like, all right, what triggered you to ask about that?
But again, as any lawyer will tell you, don't ask a question you don't know the answer to, because the witness could say anything. So,
but this is not that kind of trial.
And this is not that kind of show.
It's cheesy.
This is a show where Robert, you know, the Earl of Grantham, can recite to you the exact lines that were
conducted. He pauses for a minute, but I mean.
But he does, he gives the exact wording, and it's like, oh, yeah. So what Robert has to repeat.
Well, no, let's talk about what everybody has to repeat.
Okay.
So Robert's last. Mrs. Hughes is, it's O'Brien first. O'Brien is called for the prosecution, and she basically has to mention that when he came back from London that last time before Vera was found dead, he had a scratch on his cheek, and she overheard him and Anna talking about, okay, so how did it go? And it went worse than you could possibly imagine.
Right.
So that's basically what she has to say. And also like she overheard a little bit of their side of like the conversation with his lawyer before he went, but not really that much. There wasn't that much information there, just that he was angry.
Right.
And so, which surprise, yeah. But,
well, that was a conversation with Vera.
Oh, no, right. It was with the lawyer.
Right.
And then Mrs. Hughes is called, and I don't know how she could like distinguish what a slap about to slap somebody sounds like, but she did it.
Right. Right. I mean, again, what she says is that it sounded like he was threatening to hit her.
And also that he called her a bitch.
Well, I mean, he called her a bitch. That's definitely.
That's true.
But you know, when you're listening outside, and you know, the vent that what they're talking about her listening through wasn't something where she was going to be able to see what's going on.
I'm also confused about how it didn't come up that Vera was blackmailing him.
Yeah,
because they all this is Hughes like validate like how angry he was by, oh, she's forcing him to leave his employment because she's going to rain scandal down on them.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on here that was not really brought out for the defense. Maybe the defense was like, oh, that would make it a bigger motive or something. Like, I don't know. The strategy here was poor. And so they think they put all their eggs in there. We're going to call Robert as a character witness. And he does a
good enough job on direct.
Right.
But then cross, the prosecution comes up and is just like, they mentioned the conversation about, why did you prescribe some restraint on this last visit? And was there a particular like sentence or something that tipped you off that you should? And Robert's like, I don't know. Let me think. And then I wished that this was about a property owned and not the former Mrs. Bates. And then dramatic pause. And it's like, and what did he say after that? What did he say after that? And then he's just like, if only she was the former, or better still, the late.
Which is the music. I mean, there is this big dramatic, you know, everything.
Well, yeah, it's dramatic. It's a murder trial on TV.
I've seen some murder.
I know, on TV. in a like prescribed drama, like this is a drama, so I mean I'm not surprised.
Right.
But so everybody's concerned, the jury comes back, and he is found guilty,
and they pronounce the death sentence immediately, which actually, if you have a death penalty case, it is pronounced immediately, as far as you know, if you are sentenced to death, it is pronounced immediately.
And that is mentioned because Matthew talked, and it's really nice. Everybody comes to support Anna, like Mary does. Matthew comes to help like explain things because he is a lawyer. And so,
right. So when the verdict is brought in, you hear Anna crying.
Yeah, she screams.
It is very, very sad. And she's just, no, it's wrong. It's wrong.
And then him like looking at Anna with tears in his eyes and being like, Anna, it's so, it's so good. Yeah, oh, well, I'm sorry.
It's well acted. It's really,
it's really well done.
It is. And so they all go to a pub to discuss like what the next steps are going to be. Cause obviously the solicitor Murray has got like work to do immediately. And again, the procedure is very different. The fact that they can get that sentence commuted very quickly is, you know, or try to, that there's a procedure for that to do it quickly is kind of astounding to me. And also the fact that after the fact, you can basically have a whole new trial or something. It's kind of a very
Well, they're not asking for a retrial. They're mostly just asking to make it life imprisonment instead, because they can call into question the evidence.
Going forward, there's like procedures that seem quite different from what I'm used to.
Whatever. It's also TV. So basically what they want to do is not demand a retrial, because again, that evidence does not look good and they would just have to present it again. And it's very likely that the jury would just find him guilty again. And so what they want to do is call into question the idea of premeditated murder.
Right.
He didn't plan it. And if he were to really describe like, oh yeah, the rat poison, like, yes, he did buy it months ago, but he didn't plan on like immediately killing her with it. And also like,
yeah, that's not really a great way to kill somebody. It's like,
it really is.
In one night, you're going to like shove a bunch of rat poison down your throat.
But also like in her food, like what?
How were you planning to do that?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and also you went to her house to argue with her and cook something?
Yeah, exactly. Like what is that?
It's a pretty,
that's make what a I mean. Pie.
That's what I mean. Like, it's a pretty craptastic case from my perspective.
It is a crappy case. But still, either way, it was the old times. And so... anyway, basically like what happens is there's this whole gloom about, oh my god, he's going to die unless we do something,
right? And they're very convinced that, you know, that this is the end, and there's a lot of Anna torment with, do I stay at Downton, do I leave,
do I stay with Lady Mary in general,
right?
Because she doesn't want to be, it's been out of the papers, most likely because of Richard, and it's confirmed later that Richard Carlyle kept it out of the papers. But there's only so much that they can do after, if he is hanged.
Right.
And so what Anna wants to do is she's not going to stay at Downton, and she will mention a little bit more of her plan in the next section. But then later on, the original service ball was canceled because of the whole Bates thing. But then while later, I guess, they get a telegram that he's been reprieved and it's life imprisonment instead of being hanged.
And there's much joy.
Yay.
Yeah.
And so
the service ball is back on.
Yeah.
And we get to hear, and we'll talk about it more in the Matthew and Mary section, but there's a lot of like structure to the servants ball that's really kind of interesting.
Funny. I guess that's all of, well, Bates? No. Anna now wants to stay at Downton.
Right.
So, because she wants to be near Bates.
Right.
So that's important. There's the little things that we've been missing are like the little
interludes.
Yeah, interludes with Anna visiting Bates in prison and talking, and they have like their last kiss. What they think is their last kiss.
Yeah.
And it's very sad. It's mostly just sad.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's very sweet though.
Yeah, of course. Like we love them. So
yeah.
Okay. So that's Bates. He's fine. He's in prison, but he's okay.
But let's get down to it. This episode is all about Matthew and Mary.
Amen to that.
Amen to that.
So what's going on is, where do we begin? Richard Carlyle is getting on Mary's last nerve. And also, it's December. They were going to get married in July.
Right, it's December. It's Christmas. This episode opens.
It's been almost 6 months.
Right, they've got this huge Christmas tree in the hall. They're giving out presents to the servants.
And
Richard is bitching because, why aren't we getting served? Why aren't they serving us lunch? And Mary's kind of like, Well, they have because they get their feast at lunchtime and then they serve us dinner. It makes perfect sense.
And same thing at like on New Year's Eve when they're allowed to celebrate downstairs before midnight and they're just like, okay, and the upstairs people, they have to serve their own champagne.
Oh my God. Yeah, like, oh, we can't pour them out of bottles.
Oh no.
Into our beautiful waterproof glasses, which, you know, I kind of, this is waterproof, but it's not like the pretty
whatever. So Richard Carlyle is getting on their last nerve, and there's actually this really funny line from Richard that I noticed this time where they're like talking after dinner or whatever, and we'll talk about the shoot in a minute, but after dinner he's talking to her about how, well, we need to set a date, and she's just like, what's the hurry, glaciers are more fast than us.
Yeah, glaciers are faster than you on this issue, Mary.
And then she starts to walk away, he grabs her arm and Matthew notices and she like pulls away and all that stuff, but before that there's the shoot. So what's
the biggest, and there are a couple of other things in between here too. And their interludes. This is one of those episodes that I think is a must watch.
Oh, charades.
Yeah, there's charades. And there are these lines like Sir Richard's, they play charades after dinner, and you know, Lady Mary's up there doing Ten of Wildfell Hall, right? Richard's talking to Violet, and he's like, so do you always play charades after dinner on Christmas?
She's like, this is not charades, this is the game. I love that so much. And then she's basically, and he's like, I don't like to appear, like, do you guys always play games that make you appear ridiculous? And then she's just like, well, I guess your maxi will be tested.
Well, no, what she says is, life is a game where the player must appear ridiculous. And he's like, well, not my life. And she's kind of like, well, that's going to be tested.
You know? Yeah. And so, that's a fun little sequence. And then the shoot on New Year's Day.
Well, it's around New Year's Day, but yeah,
New Year's Day. And so what's going on is, well, really, first of all, Matthew is keeping up with Lavinia's father, who is ill in London, and he won't last through to the new year because of his health issues.
So Matthew goes to visit him.
Yeah, and he does die, but Matthew was with him, and he's very, very supportive. He's caring for him, especially
right.
It's not just out of guilt. I'm sure he liked the guy, but I mean, it's very guilt ridden as well because of how
right
Lavinia, the whole thing with Lavinia went. But
he agreed to have
his ashes
brought down and buried on Lavinia's grave,
which is something later,
right?
But and Mary's like, well, can I be there? And I'm just like, why?
Right, well, that comes up during the shoot, so
it does, but I'm still like, why?
So Matthew goes up, he's like, oh, I've got to go. I mean, they're clearly, Matthew and Mary are still very she cares for him, he cares for her. They're very chatty at Christmas, and so he's like, oh yeah, I've got to go out of town, but I want to come back. I want to, you know, help support, you know, Bates at his trial. Yeah. I want to be there for everybody. I'm going to be here for the shoot.
Yeah. So at the shoot, Mary, they're getting ready and they're figuring out who's going to stand by who, because that's what the ladies
apparently
do.
The ladies just go and they're good luck charms or something.
They're props.
They dress very nicely
in tweeds. Either way, Mary.
So Richard's like, well, Mary's coming with me. And she's kind of like, oh, well, you know, there are only three of us.
She's like, wait a minute. And then Matthew's just like, I thought you were going to stand next to me for the first drive. And then she's like, did I? And then he's just like, she's like, oh, yes, I did.
I'm so sorry, right?
Yeah. And so when they go and they're like, they go from the group and she's just like, thank you for saving me back there before I said something rude. And he's just like, I just don't understand why you're really still with him if he sets your teeth on edge like that. I mean, like, he does beg to be teased, really. Mm-hmm. And so, and she's just like, the awful truth is he's really getting on my nerves. And he's just like, but why are you with him then? And she's just like,
I have to, well, I can't explain. Well, if I explain.
No, that's later. That's later. And so they have a little conversation, and then it's a really cute little back and forth about like, I'm not really good at this.
Matthew's like not great at
shooting. He's like, keep my secret about how bad I am at shooting. And he did mention that in season one, that he's not a big hunter or anything like
right.
that.
And so they're having a lot of, you know, jokes and giggles about that.
And Richard's watching from afar, really upset.
Right.
And then Mary, for the second drive, she goes with Sir Richard, and Richard's really upset. He's annoyed at, like, the fact that his loader's not there. He's also upset that Mary was, like, laughing with Matthew. And she's like, he said something funny, and he's just like, will I ever be free of him? Like, again, to be fair, if this was any other, if he was not an asshole, I would completely understand.
Right,
this.
Exactly.
But he is an asshole. So. Right,
exactly. So if he were a nice guy, you'd be kind of like, oh, poor guy.
Yeah, poor guy. Like, yeah, that's so true. Matthew should back off or whatever. Right. But he's not. And so and they like start arguing, and then Matthew comes over and is just like, is everything okay? And Mary's just like, he's lost his loader. It's okay.
Right. So Mary is so diplomatic in this whole sequence with both Matthew and with Sir Richard. I mean, these are traits you don't see in her much, that she smooths
the water. Especially
at
the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, she, and even later, you know, sometimes she gets very high handed and whatever, but
she
definitely can also kind of try to smooth things over. And she's definitely trying to do that.
Yeah,
with this whole Matthew Sir Richard thing.
Yeah, and so that after the shoot, then there's that dinner sequence where like she like pushes away from him, like grabs her arms away from him, and she goes into the hall to go to the drawing room, and Matthew follows her, and Matthew's like, Mary, why are you still engaged to this guy? And she's just like, I have to be, like, I can't tell you why or else you'd despise me, and that I really couldn't bear. And he's just like, what? And then she's like called into the drawing room by Cora, and she's like, I have to go. And Matthew's just like, what the fuck was that?
I don't understand what just happened now.
Yeah. And he like, he really just genuinely the sequence where he's just like, you don't have to marry him. You don't have to marry anyone. You know, you have a home here as long as I'm alive. It's so sweet.
Oh, right. And you're just like, oh,
he's so cute. Anyway.
So sweet.
And then, like, I think that night, Cora is with Robert, and Robert asks her if he noticed the moment with Mary and Richard in the dining room. Literally, this happened in the dining room, like, in front of everybody.
Right.
And so
he talks to Cora. He's like, is there some reason that she's with him? Because, you know,
I really don't know why.
he clearly says her teeth on edge. This is terrible. And Cora's like, well, yeah,
there's this one line that I love where she's just like, perhaps it's time. And I'm just like, oh my God.
And so she tells Robert, and Robert's like, so this is why they're staying together. It's like, and sometime later, Robert talks to Mary, and
it's so blunt too. Like, she sits down, he's like, can I ask you something? And she's like, yeah, sure, why not? And he says, is the reason you stay with Richard Carlyle because he has a story on you of Mr. Pamuk dying in your bed? And she's like, who told you? How long have you known? And he's just like, not long.
who told you? It's like, yeah, I guess mother told you. And he's like, she chose her moment well.
Yeah, because he was upset about Bates and all that stuff. So really, his life couldn't get much worse.
And he was just like, oh, great. But he tells her, like, go to America. Like, we will ride this out.
Yeah, you don't worry about the scandal. We're already going to be a house of scandal if Bates dies.
Right. So, if Bates is, you know, he's a convicted killer, the story's going to be out there. Don't worry about this.
Get away.
We will ride it out. Go to America. Stay with your grandmother.
Bring back a cowboy
from the Middle West. And yeah, you see how relieved Mary is.
I'm like, thank God.
Oh, thank God. Yeah, she's still got the hurdle of she's got to tell Richard. She's like, okay.
Oh, and also Robert asks, is just like, all right, well, does Matthew know? And she's just like, oh no, he doesn't know. And then he's just like, wait, I thought that's why you guys split up or something. And what she says is weird to me. Mm-hmm. He says something, oh, I thought that's why kept you guys apart or something. And then she says, no, that's to do with Lavinia. And I'm just kind of like, I thought he meant at the end of season one, not now, but sure. Mm-hmm. I love that he doesn't really know why I feel like he should know why they didn't get together in season one.
Like, Robert tends to be a little bit oblivious. Like, I mean, he is not in the circuit with Violet and Isabel and stuff like that. I think he does the guy things and does business things. And when they're talking about things that he thinks are just, you know, like, oh, about that women or about women's stuff. He tunes out. So, and there's a lot of that. You see that. And I think that that's true even with some men now, like even when they start talking about Cora and the pregnancy thing, when that whole thing was going on, I was like, la, 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 I don't need to know. I don't need to know why she's pregnant, really. I mean, I sort of do, but don't.
Also, then we go to the grave scene after like this conversation. Mary has decided, all right, well, I'm going to move to America. And this is when Anna is like, well, I'll go with you. I will be out of Downton, but I don't have to be away from you. And she's like, oh, thank God. And right. So that's the plan. They're going to go to America. Now, when the ashes are going to be buried at Lavinia's grave, it's her, Matthew, and Isabel there. And I'm just like, why is Mary there? Like, why are you here?
But Matthew was very grateful.
He appreciated Sam. And she did keep up with what was going on, but I'm still like, girl, I don't know if Matthew was still like upset about how like things ended with Lavinia, if, like you seeing you guys together or whatever. Like, I don't know if you would want to be like at her father's mini funeral. Either way, they bury Swire's ashes with Lavinia, and Mary's just like, well, now this, we were all a part of this, each other's stories for a little while. And Mary's like, and now that story's at an end, I'm going to be moving away. Like, Matthew doesn't really want to stay here until really the time comes where he needs to step in as heir and stuff like that. He wants to go back to Manchester, and I'm going to be moving away. And he's just like, to Haxby, right? And like the house they were going,
wherever I go.
And Matthew's like, what?
wherever I go, you know,
that time is over. And Lavinia was a part of that,
right?
And so then Mary leaves, and Matthew and Isabel have this conversation. I love Isabel in this conversation.
Yeah,
it's amazing, because even though she was upset, and Matthew does bring this up, that she was upset with Mary for making her decisions in season one the way she did, she kind of also recognizes she was just taking the wrong advice,
right?
But also she
was a child.
Yeah,
she's very young.
And so Isabel, like as they're walking away, like Mary's like 7 feet away.
Yeah,
Isabel's just like, she's still in love with you, you know? And Matthew's like, I don't think so.
And she's like, it's like, a player's note on your face.
Isabel quoted me.
Yeah,
or I quoted Isabel and just subconsciously didn't know it. But so she's just like, okay, well, listen, if you don't recognize that and like you don't want to be happy, then shame on you. And Matthew's like, I don't deserve to be happy, and neither does Mary.
And Isabel's like, if this has anything to do with that poor sweet girl, meaning Lavinia, then you have got it completely wrong. She never wanted this for you. She never made anyone unhappy. She never caused a day's sadness in her life. She wanted you to be happy.
She told you.
This is not what she wanted. Stop it, basically.
Cut it out.
Cut it out. If I could beat you up, you're my adult child, and I should beat the crap.
Yeah. And when they go to dinner, like one night or something, like as they're going inside, like she's just like, I wish that you would fight for Mary or whatever. And she's just like, no, I don't think that's going to happen. And she's like, well, then shame on you. And don't you dare invoke that name of that sweet dead girl again. Thank God for Isabel.
Yeah, you can go, Isabel.
Thank you, Isabel. And again, Matthew was just like, during the conversation at the graveyard, he's just like, well, you didn't like her that much for throwing me over. And she's like, that's a different conversation. Things have changed now.
Multiple times.
But they genuinely have. Like, mm-hmm. Since then, they've both grown as people. She has stayed by his side all this time, like while he was recovering, all of that stuff, mm-hmm. Even though they keep saying Lavinia did. I think the writers a little bit of an amnesia plotline thing.
Yeah, maybe they intended for that to happen, but that
didn't happen.
We saw.
Either way, so much has changed since, and their dynamic has changed, and they appreciate each other. I think they needed to grow as people before they were able to come together, especially Mary needed to do some growing.
Right.
And definitely. To like gain some perspective in her life.
But so did Matthew.
Oh, for sure.
And so what happens is that there is a night
at that dinner that I just mentioned while they're going into dinner, that dinner. Mary is just like, all right, it's time. I'm going to tell Sir Richard what's going on.
Right.
And I'm going to leave for America, and I'm going to break off the engagement.
Right. And so she does. She tells him. Mm-hmm. And he is really angry.
Really quickly, before we get to this part, I would also like to mention, and there's a great Violet moment coming up. I was just reminded of a Violet line where Daisy's in the library crying.
Oh, yeah.
And she is mending the fire, but she's like crying about the whole like William thing before she goes to the farm, because she's still doesn't know what to do. And Violet comes in and is just like, oh, what's the matter? And they have this whole conversation about and because Violet was also a big part of the William thing, where she was just like arranging for him to get moved, arranging for the for him to get married, all that stuff. So she was a big part of that. So she talks to Daisy about how, like, well, you did all this when you didn't even like him? And she's like, no, I did like him, but I just didn't really love him all that much. And she's love him like that. And it sounds very loving.
It doesn't sound unloving
that you did all this for him.
Right. You wanted him to have comfort when he's dying and all these things.
That doesn't sound unloving.
And so Daisy's crying and Robert comes in. He's like, what's going on? And she's like, oh,
mending the fire and suffering. And then he says, well, she shouldn't be up here at this hour. And I'm like, dude,
Robert,
this is so oblivious.
Bring the room.
All right, going back to what's going on with
Sir Richard. So Mary tells him, like, you know, this is it. And Sir Richard gets mad and he starts yelling at her. And the yelling is loud enough that Matthew hears it. And once again, he kind of comes to intervene. He comes in.
Oh, no. We missed a big part.
I'm sorry.
So, and I forgot the order of this. So basically what happens is during that search party for ISIS, this happens before that. I just looked at my notes. It happens before.
Does it?
Matthew finds out before.
Oh, okay.
And which makes this even better, actually.
Yeah.
So basically what happens is that, this is also after the conversation about, oh, I'm going to go to America. Mm-hmm. So they are
But she doesn't tell him she's going to America. She just tells him, I'm going somewhere. I'm going away.
Well, no. At the gravestone, yes. But she does mention it in this conversation. Okay. What happens is they're on the search for ISIS. They don't find her. Matthew also comes in before they even go on the search party. He goes in to look for Mary to talk to her.
Right.
But then Robert is just like, all right, we're going on a search party for my dog. You want to come?
Matthew even says, like, we can put a whole search team together and use some real method. And Robert's like, let's do it.
And so on their way back, Matthew is just like, well, listen, I came to talk to you, actually. I wanted to find out what you meant by what you said, like, about how you have to marry, how you have to marry Carlisle, even though he's an awful person, you hate him. And she's just like, well, and how I would despise you if I knew the reason. And she's just like, you would. And he's just like, try me. Does anybody else know? And he's like, well, my father knows. And he's like, does he despise you? And it's like, he's very disappointed in me. And he's just like, it cannot be enough for you to marry the guy. And she's like, all right, well, let's go ahead and tell you that. She tells him
the scene is so beautiful.
Matthew is like facing the camera. She's in the background and Matthew's just like kind of really, really perplexed. And he's rethinking the entire, like, what happened at that party.
Did you love him?
Because if you loved him, and she's just like, I didn't even know him.
And I'm just looking for excitement. I don't even know what I was doing.
It's even funnier. And he's like, but why would you? And then she's like, I don't know. It was lust. I don't know.
Right. It was lust. I was looking for excitement. I don't know. But she's like, now I'm test your lady Claire and blah, blah, blah.
I've fallen. I'm impure. And he's like, don't try to make this fall when I'm trying to understand. And she's like, thank you for that. And so he's just like, well, even with this story, you cannot marry that guy.
Because it's awful.
And then she's just like, well, my father suggested I go to America or to wait it out or something like that. And then he's like, well, go or stay. I love that he keeps the option to stay open in that conversation. And he's like, well, go or stay. You cannot marry the guy. And she's like, all right, yeah, you're right. That's so true. I can't.
Right. And it's part of her process too. Like she needed to hear not only that she has a place to stay, but also that everyone sees how bad this is.
And she also just, I think she just really wanted Matthew to know, because I think that having that over her and him not knowing, I think it's just, they have shared so much in their life together and just every possible thing. And to have this like secret that she felt like she needed to tell him even before and to be like, all right, well, nothing to lose now. Just go and tell you.
Yeah.
And so that's nice. And then he's just like, well, you were wrong about one thing. And she's like, one thing? All right, what's that? And he's like, I never could despise you. So yeah. Good.
Yeah. And we're all going,
I know.
It's so sweet. So then we have
the confrontation.
So Richard does not take being thrown over well.
I don't blame him either. Although he had to see this coming, right? So Matthew comes in, he's like, oh, there he is, the knight in shining armor.
Richard says that to Matthew.
He's like, oh, there he is. And he smiles and nods
and be a villain. And I'm just like,
right. Okay. And then he starts talking about Lavinia.
She knew that you never loved her. And then Matthew's like, don't you dare. And he says, well, there was a night where she told me about it. And you and Mary were like tucked into a corner talking. And she said, if only they would be honest, and then maybe all of us could be happy. And she may have regretted it, but she said it. And
he just hits him
and punches him in the face.
And they start rolling on the floor.
And they knock over a vase.
Yes.
And Violet and Robert come in and they're just like, oh my God, what is going on here?
And they pull him apart.
But also Robert's just like, well, I'm assuming you're going to need the car tomorrow. What time do you want it to pick you up? And he's just like, you're so smooth about this. I wonder if you're going to be this suave or whatever, whenever the pages of the newspaper are covered with your eldest daughter's exploits.
We'll do our best. And then he says to Violet, Sir Richard says to Violet, well, I don't expect we will ever meet again. And she's like, Do you promise?
I love that so much.
I almost made for this episode, but I couldn't quite do it. There are a couple of cocktails in the Downton Abbey cocktail book called The Last Word and the Final Say. And I was really kind of instinctively drawn to them for this line alone, because it is so freaking perfect. And Maggie Smith is such the put down. It is just amazing.
Well, then also after that, Matthew's just like, sorry about the vase. And she's like, oh, don't be. It was given to me by a nasty aunt. I have hated it for half a century.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really funny.
It's great.
And then the next morning, Mary apologizes to Richard about, like, I'm sorry if you feel like I've used you, and I'm sorry if I have. And then Richard says, I really did love you. And she's like, okay.
Well, what she says is like, I hope the next person you love deserves it more than I did.
Yes. And then he leaves. And
We have the servants' ball.
Matthew and Robert have a little drink beforehand. But
so there's a structure to the servants' ball. Certain members of staff are supposed to dance with certain members of the household. So it always starts with Robert would dance with Mrs. Hughes. And I guess Carson would dance with the lady of the house, which in this case is Cora, but used to be Violet. And like it goes down the line.
And the valet would go with Violet now.
But they suspended it because of Bates, because Bates really can't dance
because of the stick. Right. And so what they're kind of assigning roles to what like needs to happen and who needs to dance with who, and Robert's like, all right, Matthew, maybe you could partner O'Brien. He's like, crikey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then you get to see a little bit of the ball. It's really cute. It's fun to see everybody interacting like that. You get a lot of good, right, like,
well, and Thomas is gonna come dance with
you also get a lot of really fun like upstairs downstairs banter this entire episode, like, mm-hmm. even at the very beginning when they're giving out their Christmas presents and all that stuff, it's really nice. Mm-hmm. But also there's this, yeah, when Thomas comes over to Violet and is just like, and she's like, well, it's a waltz, so I can do that and not this awful foxtrot or anything, and he's like, well, what about Black Bottom, my lady? And then she's just like, just keep me upright. It's very funny. And then it gets to this point where Matthew goes over to Mary and he's like, how about it? And she's like, okay. And then he's like, when are you going to America? And she's just like, well, I don't know. We're still trying to arrange things and waiting to hear back from my grandmother in New York and all that stuff. And he's like, interesting.
Yeah, you see him processing. Then they're so adorable dancing together. And then Robert goes to talk to Cora. They both go and have like a little drink in the drawing room or whatever.
I completely missed this. Earlier scene, Cora got a letter from Sybil, mm-hmm. and Sybil is pregnant.
Yay!
But Robert and Cora didn't go to the wedding, only Mary and Edith did in Dublin. Mm-hmm. So that's that. And basically Cora tells Robert that, well, Robert comes in and is like, oh yeah, last I saw Matthew was dancing with Mary. And and Tora's like, let's not interrupt that.
Yeah, no one touches that.
But then Cora basically says, I know that you don't really approve of them, but I want...
Talking about Sybil.
Yes. I'm sorry, yeah. But I want to go there and I want them to be able to come here. I'm not going to be kept away from my first grandchild. And that is like, not happening.
The chauffeur too.
Yeah. And he's like, she's like him too.
Yeah.
And then there's this moment before this the big thing where Daisy and Anna are downstairs. They're at the Ouija board again.
Yeah.
And oh, it's so good. I didn't understand it the first time I watched it, but I don't know, Mom, really, leave me alone. Leave me alone. But then like ever since then, I've understood it. So what they do is they're doing the Ouija board thing, but they think the other's moving it, but they aren't. And what the Ouija board says is, may they be happy with my love. Basically, it's Lavinia.
Yeah.
And so then, and they don't say it's Lavinia because first of all, how would they know?
Right, but, yeah, it could be someone wanting Anna and basically.
I guess somebody wants someone else to be happy.
Right.
And then we go outside in the snow. And also, I love Mary's dress in this. Oh, it's so pretty. And she doesn't have a coat on.
Right. It's a sleeveless silk shantung, I think. And it's
like kind of brownish.
But it's more brown than maroon. It's really pretty.
It's like almost purple plumish.
Right, but it's got this beautiful like jet beading on it. It's just, it's gorgeous.
It's so gorgeous. Beautiful. But she's not wearing a coat. And this also leads to a very sweet moment late in the later seasons that I adore. But, so basically Mary is outside in the cold. She's kind of standing there. Matthew comes up, and I wrote down a lot of these lines, by the way.
I'm shocked.
I know. Matthew goes outside and is kind of like, they're just kind of talking. And then they're talking about, so you're still going to go to America, even though they had this conversation like a couple minutes ago. And Mary's like, yeah, that's, I guess I basically have to.
But then he says this, would you stay if I asked?
If I asked you to, which is basically what they said in season one, when Mary asks him, like, would you have stayed if I had accepted you? And he says, of course. And then Mary like looks at him like bewildered and is just like, don't say that unless you mean it. And they have a little bit of back and forth. And there's this wonderful line of that Matthew says of, you lived your life and I lived mine. Now it's time we live them together. And they talk about Lavinia's and she's just like, well, what about your oath to your vow to the memory of Lavinia? Like what's going to happen then? And also what about Pamuk? Will he not like resurrect himself like, whenever we argue? And he's like, no.
And he's like, I was wrong.
And also you don't need my forgiveness for the whole Pamuk thing.
Right.
And then
you lived your life. I lived mine.
Now it's time we live them together. And
she's like, don't take me there.
Unless you're really sure. And then he's like, I'm sure.
I'm sure. Will you marry me? And she's like, oh,
no,
my
she doesn't. Probably. No, she doesn't. He doesn't say, will you marry me yet? He's like, well, how about it? And she's just like, I won't say anything unless you do it properly. And he's like, he laughs. And he knew that she was going to say that.
Yeah.
He gets down on one knee. And I wrote it down.
Yes.
You must say it properly. I won't answer unless you kneel down and everything.
And he kneels down.
And he says, Lady Mary Crawley, will you do the honor of becoming my wife? And she says, yes. And then they kiss and then they hug.
And it's beautiful.
And they spin and we all cried.
Yes.
All me, mom, and dad, we all cried because we always
so
cry.
Good. This is the reason you watch this show, people.
It's fantastic.
It is fantastic. And you know, you've had two seasons of build up to this,
mm-hmm.
and it's been very credibly done. It's just, oh, it's so good. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
so I want to do, we normally do best parts first. I want to do worst parts first.
Sure.
Okay. So what were your worst parts?
Rosamund, I don't care. Thomas being an awful person and getting rewarded for it.
Mm-hmm.
Edith question mark. The Antony Strawn stuff I don't love. I mean, I like that she is getting some good attention, but again, I think they could just be friends and not like anything more. Richard being an awful person to Mary and Daisy complaining. That's it.
Yeah. I those are pretty much mine. The whole Isis being stolen storyline. I hate, I hate Daisy's
attitude.
I hate Lord Hepworth and the maid and the whole thing. Basically, I didn't really care that much about Edith. I'm kind of neutral about it, but that's pretty much all of my worst parts.
Yeah.
What were your best parts?
Well, Obviously, in all caps, I have Matthew and Mary.
Can I just say everything else is what I have? And
sure.
So you can go.
But I'd like to highlight a few things. Like, Violet in this episode is fucking fantastic.
Oh, God, yeah.
She has, first of all, she has amazing lines. Of like, there's also one, like, earlier on when they're handing out gifts, like, with the family. And she's just like, oh, what is this? And Isabel's like, it's a nutcracker. We thought you'd like it to crack your nuts. Wanted to point that out. But, basically, she is such a great person in this episode. Like, she, first of all, she helps out Rosamond, but she also respects her wishes enough to be like, well, she can make her own decisions. I just want her to be aware of all the facts. And her helping out Daisy is so sweet. And
yeah, that's really sweet.
Yeah, it's just, it's really nice. And her helping out Edith and like getting getting an idea of what's going on with Antony Strelan, even though it like kind of backfires in the way that like Edith's still interested and all that stuff. But I mean, she's great. She's fantastic. And her helping out Mary with Sir Richard and all that stuff. It's great. She's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And who else? Anna and Bates, obviously, they're fantastic in this episode. Robert is really good in this episode. I like that he knows now. I like that he's aware of all the facts.
I like how he responds.
Yeah, him being like, go to America, bring back a cowboy millionaire and shake things up a bit. I've had to live through war and nothing to say of your sister's choice of husband.
It's so funny. Good, now we're comparing Branson to war. Yeah. Okay.
I also really like Mrs. Patmore in this. Her subtly enough, like, she's trying to get Daisy to go to the farm and trying to encourage her that this is okay and William would have wanted this for her and all that stuff, but her doing it in the way she does is really funny.
But it's intuitive for her because she's usually very, very direct, like direct to the point of being awful.
Yes.
But the fact that she recognized, I gotta go in the roundabout way for this one.
Yeah. The servant's ball is great. I found
that
very fun.
Yeah, that
Mr. Mason, I love.
Yeah.
It's so sweet. Him and Daisy, it's a sweet relationship. And also Isabel for knocking some sense into her son. I love that. I think this is one of Isabel's best episodes. She's not in it too much. She says a couple fun things, but her being very clear to Matthew about, listen, I want you to be happy, and this is not what's going to make you happy.
And this is just stupid.
And Lavinia wouldn't have wanted this for you.
Right. So I want to, is that everything?
Yes.
So my big, I want to do bigger strokes with this because, again, part of the reason this is such a great episode is how it is structured. I mean, the writing is beautiful. It's tight. It's well edited. But the sets and the set dressing. So they have this luncheon out during the shoot that would be an elaborate dinner at anyone's house. And, you know, like, these servants have to set it up out at like some outdoor venue just to feed people who are out shooting pheasants. I mean, it's got like all the china and the crystal and all of these things. This whole lifestyle is so, it's beautifully presented. Like, you know, wow, if that was a real thing, that would be amazing. And, you know, you think about the cost and just the thought and everything else that went into these scenes that are very small, really. I mean, they probably sat there for hours, but they had to edit things out. And it's incredible the amount of work that goes in from all of the people involved in this program. And I'm really super impressed with the production. It's incredible.
Right.
So what grade did you give this episode?
A+.
Yeah.
I can't give it anything else. If it's lower, you're lying. Like, I'm sorry.
No, I know it's an A+ for me. I think I would put extra pluses, even though that's not really a thing.
like Ralphie and Christmas Story.
A+++++.
Exactly.
I
don't know why that was a very specific reference from that dream sequence.
It is. But you know, that sense of, this is such great television. And of course, it's even, as a standalone episode, it might be really good on its own. In context, like
it's even better.
It's amazing.
If you just watch this singular episode, you get a lot from it anyway.
Right. But, you know, if you watch it the show all the way through to this point, it's like, oh my God,
it really is a payoff.
The whole reason we watch this show. And it has all of the elements that we'd be looking for in a Downton Abbey episode, and it has all the things that we want from it. So mm-hmm. I can't commend it enough.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are
going to be going into season three. It's and we exciting. Will see how Matthew and Mary develop and what else develops with them. But it is going to be fun. Right. We really want you to tune in and to join us. And
cheers.